Okay, so with your permission, I'll hit record.
Okay.
Today is the 17th of July, 2009, and I'm here at the Faculty of Business at the University of Botswana with Dr. Marabella. So thank you very much for taking time out of your schedule to meet with us.
Thank you.
So before I, well, we spoke a little bit before I hit record about what I'm doing here and our project aims. And before we get into some of the specific questions I had for you, I was wondering if you would mind just introducing yourself a little bit and telling us a little bit about your own background.
Okay. I'm Motsumi Marabella. I work with the Department of Management in the University of Botswana. I've been with the university for 10 years. And my focus is on human resource management, research methods, labor relations, organizational behavior, and lately I teach public sector management. I have an MBA and also a PhD in behavior and organizations. So I'm a senior lecturer now in the Department of Management.
Excellent. As we spoke about a little bit, Botswana is held up as a shining light for many other countries in terms of its public sector reform. And we were talking about how you agree that that's true to some extent, but you have a slightly different take on or slightly different analysis on what the drivers of this reform are and what their function and outputs are in many ways.
Yeah, that is true. I agree entirely that Botswana is different from other countries. Compared to other countries, for example, we hear of cases where there's been absolute corruption and money from mineral resources used to, you know, create chaos and wars and situations like that. And indeed, if you look around, you see as Botswana, compared to other African countries, has fairly done well in terms of actually managing these resources to effect change for the ordinary people. You can see infrastructure, roads, clinics, and a lot of money has gone into social services. But having said that, I'll say there's the other side also, particularly when you look at the current public sector reforms. I think normally people don't give the context to that. They just look at mineral wealth, money going to schools, money going to health. Botswana also has poverty. Botswana also has serious problems, social ills like unemployment. And if you look at the income differentials, you'll see big problems. There is also a gap between the poor and the rich. So that's a problem. But in terms of analysis of the public sector reforms and changes, I would argue that these reforms have to be seen from Botswana macroeconomic structure, particularly its over-dependence on the diamond sector, the mineral sector. And in terms of what I've written, I've argued that it's very important to sociologize and historicize the nature of the forms and their linkages and their ties to imperialism and the colonial structure that I think was important in facilitating and modeling the economic structure of Botswana. That is its heavy dependence and reliance on the diamond sector. So if you look at imperialism, what it has done, of course, this is not actually just imperial powers. They act in alliance with the national bourgeoisie. If you look at what has happened is that most of African countries have been appendages and vehicles for supply of raw materials to developed countries. And these developed countries have structures and institutions and interests. And those structures and mechanisms like World Bank, IMF, WTO are not neutral, not just neutral, they are very powerful, and they have an economic agenda, which agenda people have said, well, is the Washington consensus. The theory that, the market is very important to facilitate development and progress. And in terms of Botswana, if you counterpose Botswana's progress vis-a-vis the reforms that have been introduced and are still actually going on in Botswana public sector, like privatization, which generally seeks to pave way for the private sector to, get involved in the management and not just management, the profiteering from public sector corporations, which are so essential for developing countries. I talk about water, for example, power, electricity. That is very interesting because you see, if Botswana has done so well, notwithstanding the problems I've said, that there are many people are poor, and in fact statistics confirms that, and indeed government has admitted that they are dealing with very serious challenges of poverty and unemployment. This is why they have drought relief programs where people are being relieved from drought, and they get very little actually, government does realize. And related to this mass unemployment and poverty is criminality, the crime. I'm not saying there's an automatic relationship between unemployment and crime, but people without food, without other things, they really are desperate. But if you look at that, then we say, well, if Botswana has done well and is doing well, why then would it seek to go through the route that, for example, for many other African countries has brought disaster, structural adjustment programs? You know, this has happened in Zambia, it has happened in Zimbabwe, it has happened in South Africa, water privatization, it has happened in many countries. So why would they do that if they have done well economically, they have the resources, and they could simply say, well, the public sector is very crucial in helping government with its agenda of providing quality life for their people. I mean, as I speak to you, government has a very strong view about privatization, and Botswana, in fact, have said, well, we are a free market-led economy and we'll go into privatization. And we say, why? Why privatize public corporations like water, like power, like telephones? They are doing well. You know, they make profit. And if you look at the annual reports, actually they are doing well. But should they make profit and make it its actually ultimate objective? Once you do that, actually, you run the risk now that you are transferring public resources into private resources. Mm-hmm. It has happened in Eastern Europe, Russia, it's a case, and other countries. And you are cutting off from many people from essential services, because it doesn't just, you know, automatically happen like privatization. It comes with the implications, the price, for example. private sector basically motivated by the profit made, competition and other things. So I think we already see those lessons, and some of them have been very sad for Botswana. If you see how Botswana has performed and some of these recent reforms, people have lost jobs, and Botswana has a problem of unemployment like other African countries. I think unemployment could be around 20%. Government would argue that it's going down, it's 18%. But it's the quality of the jobs, really. People here, majority of them, on average, they're getting 600 pula, which is, I think, really very little compared to equivalent of a dollar. It will be less than $60, you know. If you look at the labor reforms that come with this thing, we have now moved to casualization, we have moved into outsourcing, and the quality of those jobs are very bad, actually. People are now working long, long hours for very little, and there's job insecurity. I just want to reflect with the issue of privatization of water. I think government is moving towards that. We saw the first steps, for example, with the closure of public standpipes. You know, the other communities, the other people who could not afford to bring in a tap into the household. But government closed this under the pretext that, well, you have to get standpipes and this is good for you. But the effects have been very bad. Children have to actually use wheelbarrows, put water, walk, driving these wheelbarrows, and sometimes going distances. We have seen children and mothers and young people wasting a lot of time queuing at one public standpipe because some of the public standpipe have been closed. But recently now government has changed the distribution of the water system to the extent now that Water Affairs, which used to be a government department and providing water at really lower rate, is now being incorporated into Water Utilities Corporation, a corporation which charges fairly higher fees. And you see that, you know, closing public standpipes and also trying to incorporate a government department water supply for rural villages and other communities into public corporation like Water Utilities, which government says is going to privatize in time. It's creating a secure market. It's a captured market. So going back to your original question, I'll say, why are we doing these things? We are not just doing these things because government want to punish people. I think it's very important to understand how the capitalist system works, actually. If you look at our economic situation, yes, you have done well, but also, yes, we are very vulnerable. The paper I wrote some 3 years back has alluded to that vulnerability and crisis, and now we are in the crisis. My argument was very simple. The way Botswana's economy is structured, it puts it in a very vulnerable situation because it depends on diamond, a commodity for which we don't have the market here in Botswana, a commodity for which we don't have real control over its production system. Remember, Botswana has a company called Debswana, which is a joint partnership with a private company called Debswana. Debswana is linked to the Oppenheimer family and also to Anglo-American So we already see the connection between the state and the multinationals on the drive, not just to dig this shiny, nice stone for the people, but for a multinational for making profit, actually. But it is in that process where we see that we are in a very complex relationship, because if you cannot control the production system, the marketing, and you depend entirely on the international market, like your country, our diamonds are sold in the United States of America, in China, and I think Japan, and this is where really the crisis has hit, and that thing has roller coastered and snowballed to Botswana. For example, recent statistics from government, national account statistics from Central Statistics Office, they clearly show that this quarter, 2009 quarter, Botswana's GDP has fallen by close to 20%. Last year, in the same quarter, I think they made 23 billion, the GDP. And this year, the same quarter, this quarter, they say it's around 18 billion. And the driving thing for that is the diamond sector, because according to Central Statistics Office, the mineral sector has fallen by around 68%. At some point, actually, I think 2 or 3 months back, the diamond industry, which is the main pillar of this economy, we saw actually the closure of mines here. You know, three crucial mine shafts were closed here, signaling that, and people had to be told, take leave. So that was really so serious. Last year, around November, government says they sold no diamond at all. Yeah, they didn't sell any diamonds last year, November, at I think the height of this crisis. So there is this vulnerability. And for many years, for many, many years, I think for 3 decades now, government has been talking about diversification, and it's very difficult to diversify away from diamond sector. Government has done a lot of what this global financial institutions have requested. You know, liberalize the economy. They have done that. Botswana, compared to other countries, I think the tax rate for corporate tax is very low. If you look at the investment environment here, financial regulations have been actually stripped out. Investors can come here and go. And that was part of, I think, conformance to the dictates of international financial capital. You know, they have done a lot in terms of paving the way for what they will say is the attraction of foreign direct investment. And this is where desperate African countries that rely on a mono production system have to do, you know, do all those reforms. And my argument is that, well, Botswana has no choice in terms of, you know, ascending to the neoliberal reforms, because they're desperate. They want to attract foreign direct investment. And one of those ways is to open up the public sector to the private sector, privatization. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the things that they can't do away. The critical question is, how do you diversify the economy away from diamonds? And institutions like the World Bank, IMF, World Trade Organization, this credit investment institutions like Standard & Poor and others will say, well, we need to see this opening up. So I think Botswana has tried to do that. And now, for me, I think what they're trying to do with the public sector, it's it's not helpful at all. You know, instead of actually helping to make the public sector efficient, they should not be demolishing it. And I've said, it shows the public sector in Botswana, from telephone to power to others, that are making profit. So you would use that profit to facilitate better public service delivery. The notion that actually you have to change ownership is misplaced, because efficiency is not a function of ownership. I mean, it's a function of management instead. So what we see in Botswana public sector shows that, yes, they can be run fairly well. We can improve on that, but you don't necessarily have to change ownership from government to the private sector. In fact, the current global economic crisis has reasserted what we have always argued, that, you know, this thing about the private sector and the market is synonymous with efficiency is wrong. Actually, what we see now, the private sector has created problems because of its inefficiency. If we go back to the root of this crisis, it's accumulation. It's the notion that we can make more money, so lend more money to people who are not in a position to pay, actually speculate the subprime lending that has happened in America. It's not government. But to the contrary, now we see government actually bailing out the private sector, giving money to the private sector. And who has to pay? It is us, the ordinary people who pay the tax. You know, some of the people really are losing jobs now. And this is because of the inefficiency that has come with the neoliberal theory that really have seen the market as a sine qua non to efficiency. This is wrong. And my argument is that for developing countries, the public sector is very important. We need education. What has happened in this country is very shameful. If you see how government has introduced a school fees after many, many years of Botswana being a model of a free education. Going with this agenda of neoliberalism, we have seen a government being very harsh on the education sector. Children were returned home from primary to secondary because government has started school fees, and parents could not afford. You know, we have seen actually a very negative effect of that thing. We have had dropouts. Thousands of students could not go back to school because the parents could not afford to pay, and government said, well, parents pay, but how much are you going to afford if you are earning 600 pula, $60 a month? You know, we are talking about a very serious case. So this have come into education, these reforms have come into education and hit people so hard. We have seen it here in the University of Botswana. They privatized the bookshop. The company is making a lot of money charging students so much that students cannot afford to buy books, you know. So there are negative effects. They privatized the catering companies here. We have seen workers losing jobs. They have privatized the cleaning here. We have seen people really working like slaves, I tell you. You know, they work 7 days a week here because they're in a company. They have no entitlements that other people who are employed by the university as full-time cleaners, like pension gratuity and very decent salary. They don't have that. But for the company which got this outsourcing job, they just work them through and through. And you see these people. I'm sure if you look outside there, you might see some of them. When you talk about a holiday, I talk about the rest. For them, that's not the case. Mm-hmm. The company say, come tomorrow, but what am I doing? Just clean. You're employed by me. So all these things have consequences for the welfare of the people. So I would go again to the case of analysis and say, some people don't want really to go to what Marx would call the realm of the deep. The analysis is from the surface. And by that, they fail to see the linkages between what we see from the surface and the events that are driving what we see at the surface level. And those events, for me, it's the urge for accumulation. And accumulation comes with profitability with that, it's a crisis with that, it's socio-economic problems that affect the welfare of the people. In the end, you privatize. We have a hospital here, private hospital, which government has, I think, facilitated, and they're partly a shareholder. You know, if you are sick at that hospital, if you don't have money, you are going to die. They'll say, give us 10,000 pula, 1,000 or so euro upfront. You know, people have been returned there because they can't afford. But very fortunately, we have a public hospital called Princess Marina here. I can get sick and knock at Princess Marina without looking at my status. I'll get a bed and I'll get very good medication, and the doctor will attend me. But if you see how much money has gone to creation of that private hospital for people who are well off, you just see that it's wrong for a developing country like Botswana. Botswana has done well, but I think in moving forward, the demolishing of a very good welfare system that government has created here, it's a very sad thing for me, actually. Yeah.
I have a question for you about the involvement of the unions. One of the things that I've been quite interested to see is that there seems to be quite a lot of high-level cooperation between the unions and government, and that you don't have this adversarial relationship as is characteristic of the relationship between unions and government, say, in South Africa, where the unions are really at the forefront of opposing the types of moves that government make, precisely for the reasons that you have laid out. And I was wondering if that's something that you could maybe comment about or account for what seems to me to be a very strong working relationship between two groups that may not have the same interests.
Really. Yeah. I think to some extent that's really true, particularly in the public sector. Our unions here, I'm a trade unionist myself, have been tamed. And this is not by accident. Even though we say Botswana is a democratic country, we have had elections 5 years, no fighting, very peaceful country, but we have had very draconian labor status that has sought to control labor relations. You know, that has been a record. You know, only recently did government actually go ahead and rectify ILO conventions. In the past, you know, government workers, for example, they were not allowed to form unions. It was just associations, and associations have no bargaining power. That has happened in Botswana, and only the last 5 years, as I speak to you, unions, public sector unions, are in the process of transforming towards that. Even when they've done that, there are problems, actually, particularly in terms of the right to strike. You know, Botswana is not really explicit on the right to strike. But even if we were to have that, the legalism, the mechanism that have been put for trade unions to go through a process at which they will ballot and say we have decided to strike, it's so cumbersome and long and frustrating in the end. And this works for government. In the past, actually, government was known to have people who are sympathetic to it in the trade union leadership. So that is a problem, but it doesn't mean that ordinary workers down the rank and file don't fight. Mm-hmm. They do fight. But unions by nature are contradictory bodies. You know, we have this trade union bureaucracy and the rank and file. And for trade union bureaucracy, actually, this leadership that we have, you know, they're more or less comfortable in their status for as long as they get members paying in. And with that encashment, they can pay themselves salaries and other things. You know, they're full-time officials in, I think, major trade unions. And with that status, you don't face any job insecurity. So when workers, ordinary workers, want to fight and go forward, normally the unions retreat. We have seen that here with the case of the parking, where University of Botswana introduced disastrous parking policy. You know, to come to university to park your car, I'm sure you have seen barricaded things. Yeah, you have to pay. And some of us were very, very angry with this. Why should I pay to come to work? Yeah. You know, it's my right, yeah. You see. But some of those things, when you move in as the union and fight, the leadership pulls you back. And it has been the tendency in major trade unions. It's a very sad thing. We, as you rightly say, we are witnessing a situation where it looks like you have this cozy relationship between the trade unions and government. And one of the things that have come late is that they were helped by government, especially Botswana Federation of Trade Unions, the mother body, with the debt they had to pay at their misguided investment building. They invested in a property, and they have to pay, actually, the debt. And with interest going in, it was actually strangling them, and they're facing a threat by the National Development Bank that they would lose that building. And I think government went in and gave them money. So if you are funded by government, how can you now come and say, wow, I fight you? So that's one factor, but I don't think it's the overriding factor. The vulnerability I've talked about the diamond, it's also a key factor. We had a major strike here of the miners in 2004. 3,000 workers actually went on strike on bonus and unfair payment. The bosses have paid themselves a lot of money, and ordinary workers were offered nothing. They said, no, we need more money also. We both buy bread and bananas with the same price at the supermarket. But the Debswana management didn't accent to that demand, and therefore they went on strike. And that strike was a very powerful strike, actually. Mm-hmm. It went in second week. The third week, I think, which was very crucial, the union leadership called off the strike. And this was a very terrible mistake. And that helped, actually, government and Debswana to regroup and come back and actually paralyze the union totally. 461 workers, as I speak to, lost the jobs. Trade union leaders of Botswana Mine Workers Association were fired for being trade union leaders, actually, for doing trade union work. Wow. And at some point, this company, which is in partnership with government, actually, went to court seeking that trade union leaders incited the strike and they should be imprisoned. I mean, you can see that from that and the defeat following, I think, the blunder of the Botswana mine workers' leadership, the hopes of these workers were shattered. Instead of actually fighting through, they shifted the fight to the courts. And in the courts, because Debswana and multinational, they have a lot of money, they used all these tactics, technicality, mm-hmm. and the case went and dragged. I don't know, maybe it's still going on. But the last time the court said no, you sat on your rights, you waited too much to lodge your case, and therefore, you know, you have lost. Yeah? They sought condemnation that was rejected outright by the court. So with that, you would understand how I'll feel as a worker in the mine. If you say, let's go and do trade union work, you know that you'll be fired. You know that you'll be given warnings, as they did give them warning, those who were striking. So in the end, this mining company is not just a mining company. It's a joint 50-50 ownership between De Beers Mining Corporation and government of Botswana. And here were workers actually having, in my case, a justified case for, for remuneration, for bonus and salary increment, following what the bosses said. We did well this year, so we have this bonus, and they gave themselves a lot of money. So if government is in partnership with that, and we have a situation like this, you would understand this vulnerability, because if you have a very serious labor dispute in the mines, where the bread and the pillar of the country depends, then that will shatter everything. Botswana depends on diamond mining,
mm-hmm.
and it contributes around, I think, 70 to 80% of government revenue, 40-30% of GDP, over 50% of, foreign income of government. So those are the underlying issues that you can understand why Botswana workers seem to be a bit disillusioned.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. They are like trade union workers, concerned and wanting to change their status. But sometimes you have these mechanisms and structures that work against them. And one of them is the trade union bureaucracy. The other one is the economic structure. Because if we allow that to go on, then it means you are in a very difficult situation as a country. So I don't know if I answered your question.
No, no, very much. Yeah. No, that has helped to account for some of the questions I had.
Yes.
I'm very conscious of the time. I'm
yes.
not sure if you have time for maybe one more question
yes,
or for me to wrap up.
The last wrap up, maybe.
Okay,
yeah.
Just one last question I've had. I was wondering, I understand your cautionary note about the government's drive towards privatization. I mean,
yes.
it seems that there are a lot of valid concerns around this and a lot of things that need to be taken into consideration. I was wondering, though, if you had any thoughts on what seems to me to be a very strong discourse of productivity. Starting from the early 90s, you have, within the public sector itself, this whole talk around productivity and productivity and productivity, and it doesn't seem to be linked entirely to privatization. It seems to be, to some extent, self-contained within the civil service itself, that there's constant innovations and performance management and constantly new things are being constantly introduced to try and raise the level of productivity of workers within the government. And I was wondering if that's something that you've come across in your work or whether you had any particular thoughts about.
Yeah. I think, yes, we have been seeing this drive towards productivity to the extent that government built the whole structure called Botswana National Productivity
right.
Center.
Right.
And the notion that people here don't work, are lazy, they don't want breaking jobs. I think it's superficial. Because we have to ask the question, why? Why are people not productive? Is it simply that they don't want? But I think you have to understand the cause for productivity or lack thereof. And normally, people have just gone to say, people are not working, we are not productive. But the question we ask is that, how come Botswana has actually been singled out as a model of good governance? It could not have come without the ordinary workers' productivity. How come Botswana is much talked about by World Economic Forum
mm-hmm.
as an example of good economic management? This does not come from people at the top only. People have worked out. And I refer to those people who are working at the diamond mine, the pillar of this thing. They have worked very hard. It's a very simple example. Yes, we have made profits. We are happy. But now give us what is due, what is appropriate in tandem with the amount of labor that we put. Then we have no. So if you say that, I think you are saying that, no, you can work, but you don't deserve decent, better pay. Then it's not a question of ordinary people not being productive. How come Botswana has been singled out by a lot of institutions? Transparency International, let's say, the least corrupt country. You know, it means people are not really just seeking money. You know, there are structures. People are working very hard in government. They're working very hard in government. You have to understand what they get in return. There is actually poor pay, if I'm to be quite frank with you. The work ethic also is very bad because of the attitude of how people are managed, of how people should be seen as productive. Does it mean that you should work all day long? I just gave you an example of people who are cleaning this building. They're working so long, but does that mean by overworking people, does that induce productivity? I don't think so. We have to measure and also respect people and say, well, we have, if we can measure productivity, you have worked this. This is the yardstick. We are happy about what you do, or we are not happy compared to this. But when an employee says, listen, I have worked for these hours, and I have produced this, but you are giving me this. I can barely pay my house. I can't buy food. I can't pay for transport. I know of workers who go every morning footing to work. In the case of people working, they foot and walk sometimes kilometers or two. Coming to work, it's not like me, maybe I'll come to work because I want to improve my health status, but that they have no alternative. What they've been, they were paid has actually evaporated by mid-month. If you pay a person 600, you just have to go to the shops and say, with this 600, how much money would you put in grocery in Botswana? Khaburoni is not so cheap. If you take that, if you take into account that person has family, two or three children, it's 600 pula. Those kids go to school. They have to pay school fees. So in the end, it's also a question of understanding that you can't force people to be productive if you don't reciprocate and help them also in terms of also understand that you respect and they have meaningful work also. So the question of productivity, people have said labor productivity is low, but it's also linked to the agenda of international institutions. I can tell you that here, this productivity has also brought what in public sector reforms is called performance management system. Mm-hmm. This is not something that is just peculiar to Botswana. It's actually roller coaster in many African countries. But where does this theory come from? If you look and do serious study, you cannot help but understand that this is something that comes with global institutions. It's a World Bank project, you know? And it's not just productivity for its sake. I'll differ with you. It's productivity to induce ways of bringing about privatization and helping the private sector. Yeah, this is how I see the notion of productivity, but I'm pained to see that people are saying people are not productive, but the very same workers don't have enough to buy enough food. I can tell you that many workers working in the city here, they stay in one room. In that room, they cook in that room. They sleep with children. There's no ablution, toilets, nothing. They sleep in that. And it's really the working poor.